This afternoon I wanted to reflect on a theme in the Buddhist teaching of that is called bhava, or in Pali, or becoming, the process of becoming. A few years ago, a friend of mine was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and she was told that she had just 6 months to live. Well, those 6 months went by, and then another 6 months, and yet another 6 months, and, you know, we kept all going to do our goodbyes. And yet it did, you know, there was no goodbye. So, but day by day, she got thinner and thinner until she was really just like a skeleton on her bed. And she really did live with a constant and growing level of pain. And yet seemed to feel the need to keep her morphine doses just as low as she possibly could. So she was suffering. It meant being tormented endlessly by her body. And finally, I could only ask her, you know, what is it that is keeping you here? What is it that is keeping you alive? What is it that makes you so determined to wake up each morning? And she answered, she said, I've done so many things badly in my life. I've made a mess of so many things that I want to do this last thing right. I want to die well. And her sister said, she's only going to let herself die if she can die a saint. She was serious. And I remember feeling so stunned by those words and wondering, what did it mean for her to die right, to do this well? I wondered what kind of compulsion or what kind of monster within her made her demand of herself that she experience this enduring and endless pain. What kind of demon within made her feel that she had to pursue saintliness? That what was this kind of stubborn refusal? And it really was a stubborn refusal. Even on her deathbed, to allow herself to rest, to at last release this endless need to be perfect. Then, of course, it occurred to me of how perhaps really unrealistic it was to think that anyone at the moment of death might miraculously find the grace to release one of this most driving and compulsive urges in our life if we haven't learned how to release it in our life. And that urge, that compulsive urge, conventionally we might call it the search for the ideal or the demand for the perfect. And in the teaching of the Buddha, this urge is called bhava, or becoming. Something which is quite distinct from the word bhavana that I have used already, which means to cultivate or to bring into being or to allow into being. Bhava, or becoming, is a kind of profound restlessness that is always chasing something else, always chasing the perfect. And it's a kind of inner restlessness that in our lives can keep us constantly in motion, driven both by impulse and by discontent, driven also by anxiety, and driven perhaps most of all by a sense of self-doubt. It's a restlessness that really makes it difficult for us to be still, to stop, to find joy or to find ease or to find contentment. You know, if we reflect just on the word restlessness, to be without rest, to be deprived of rest. And yet somehow anxiety and self-doubt can make us believe that without this restlessness in our life, without this urge to become someone or something, that somehow life is going to lose its meaning, that we'll be no one, that we'll somehow be left behind, unworthy or invisible. Now, bhava, this process of becoming, can be both unconscious and what I would call sort of semi-conscious. Unconscious, it's like an impulse that is born of clinging and craving. You know, it's those moments when again and again we find ourselves occupying this really absurd position of constantly trying to reorder our world to fit our agenda and desires. Over and over, finding ourselves trying to create this, or trying to find this perfect moment and this perfect life where we have everything that we want and everything that we don't want. Where we are who we want to be or believe we need to be, and we've eliminated everything in ourselves that we think is undesirable or unacceptable or imperfect. What this impulse of bhava refuses to recognize is that in this life, of course, we are all going to have our own measure of loss, of grief, of change, of unpredictability, of uncertainty. We all have our own measure of that. Bhava, the demand for the perfect, just cannot believe that this applies to us. Perhaps everyone else, but not to us. So it is a state of refusal. It's a state of non-acceptance and unwillingness to embrace reality. And that unwillingness translates into this ongoing pursuit of chasing the dragon, dreaming of this life, chasing this moment where we have been successful in the task of removing all imperfection and becoming who we believe ourselves we need to be. And yet, of course, there is such a struggle in that pursuit because we live a life and we live in a world that consistently refuses to obey our demands. So disappointment becomes part of that life, and sometimes that disappointment turns into aversion. At times we're disappointed with ourselves, and at times we're disappointed with life. I would mention that in my understanding, all great mystics begin their journey at the point of disappointment. And that without disappointment, there is never any aspiration to seek for something deeper, something more enduring. If you think of Siddhartha, he was a very disappointed young man. You know, he had everything that was lovely, had everything that was delightful, everything most of us think could possibly we could want in this life. But he was disappointed. You know, his meeting with the heavenly messengers of birth, of aging, of sickness, of death, and of the life of the renunciate, those heavenly messengers, you know, were teaching him about how to bow to disappointment. Rather than feel he'd done something wrong, or something was missing, or something hadn't yet been achieved, it was learning the wisdom of bowing to disappointment as a place of waking up. As a place of understanding that we can't possibly order and reorder the world into the world we believe it should be. The impulse of becoming to reach for a world that is more perfect, I think, is something that permeates our life. We feel unhappy, we want to become happy. We feel angry, we want to become loving. We feel envy arising, we cling to it and we become jealous. Pain arises, we cling to it and we become the sufferer. Fantasy takes hold for a moment, and just for that moment, through clinging, we become the star in our own Hollywood blockbuster. To cling to anything at all is to become what we cling to. the phrase I am, endlessly picking up new descriptions through our day. I'm sad, I'm excited, I'm a failure, I'm successful, I'm anxious, I'm loving. Now, in this tradition, that process of clinging and then becoming what we cling to is what is called samsara. Or in Tibetan, it's called korba, or walking in circles. Walking in circles. And the Sufi, there's a wonderful Nasruddin story about this. When a disciple once found the Sufi master eating a pile of chili peppers, and the mullah sat there with sweat pouring down his face, red with pain. When asked why he was doing this to himself, he answered, "If only I continue a little longer, I'm sure I'll find a sweet one." That's the nature of samsara, isn't it? If we just continue a little longer, I'm sure we'll find a sweet one. Now, this is the delusion that keeps clinging and becoming going on. If only we could find the right experience, or the right state, or the right object, or the right person. If only we cling to the right thing, become who we need to be, have what we need to have, then we think we could rest. Now, I think it's very important to make a distinction between what is bhava, this process of becoming, and what is bhavana. Bhava is the process of becoming someone or something based upon craving and clinging. It's agitated and it's restless. It's born of pain and it actually leads to further pain. Bhavana means to cultivate, to bring into being, or to allow into being. And in this practice, we are always looking at, exploring what it is that we are cultivating. Not the perfect meditation. And we are not cultivating the perfect meditator. But we are cultivating the mindfulness and the understanding that allows us to release craving and clinging, that allows into being, or that brings into being, the trust and the joy and the ease and the delight of stillness. Now, bhava, or becoming, is a process that is designed to make the story of self bigger and bigger and more remarkable. Look who I am. Look who I am becoming. I have something. This is me. Bhavana, the practice of meditation, is a process that is designed to make the story of self a little lighter and a little more transparent, to calm the agitated heart and to end the contractedness of becoming. Bhavana, or meditation, is a process that brings into being really all that is wholesome, all that is liberating, all that is joyful, creative, and true. Now, I think the desire to become someone special, remarkable, someone who stands out, someone who is extraordinary, who is excellent, who is perfect in all things, I think this is a long historical story in our lives and in our culture. It's not just a personal quest. My own sense is that as a society and as a culture, you know, we give more and more praise only to those who are special and who are extraordinary and who stand out. In fact, we can have an addiction to being special because it seems to bring praise and approval and admiration. And we can have such an allergy to the ordinary. It's like we think of the ordinary as being dull. And I think there's ways that we welcome that addiction to specialness into our hearts a little bit too easily. Recently, I came across an article in a psychology magazine, and I think the title said it all. It says, Shopping for a Perfect Self. And the article goes on, it says, the jokey bumper sticker slogan, I shop, therefore I am, could actually be marking a serious truth, according to an increasing number of sociologists and psychologists. Consuming can be considered a vital and necessary path to self-discovery. We dream of shopping for beauty, for truth and perfection. And if we do not shop for a perfect society, at least we can shop for a perfect self. It goes on. When the gap between the self we are and the self we want to be seems too big, we try to bridge it with the things we acquire. But shopping has become a metaphor for self-definition. We shop for the right partner or philosophy, the right body and appearance, for happiness and for the person we want to be. It's a process of searching. What goes on in our stores is, of course, a metaphor for the turmoil and discontent that can too often be the landscape and climate of our hearts. Becoming can almost be likened to this process of shopping for a perfect self that is rooted in discontent, but more rooted in self-doubt that doesn't allow us to rest. This feeling, I think, in our world that we must always be becoming more perfect, more better, more excellent. And I think in this practice, I would love to devise a better bumper sticker that, you know, says, at peace with imperfection, I have renounced shopping. I really love the poem by Mary Oliver. And she says, you do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert, repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese high in the clean blue air are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things. I think when we hear that poem, probably part of us wants to cheer. We don't have to be good, that we don't have to walk 100 miles on our knees, that we don't have to repent to earn perfection. And I think part of ourselves probably wonders whether that's really true. You know, do we really believe it? Do we really trust that we do not have to be perfect to be worthy, that we don't have to be special to find our place in the family of things? That we don't have to be perfect to be free? Or do we sometimes find that there's a rather gnawing self-doubt that somehow steals the treasure of stillness and being from our hearts? Still the doubt that says, if I'm not special, I'll be a failure. I'll be invisible. My sense is that this demand of perfection is a growing one in our culture, the demand to be special. I see it in young people, when I work with young people, you know, this feeling that they really have to be so special. I see it in small children, you know, when people are asking three-year-olds, you know, what are you going to be when you grow up? And the poor child's probably thinking, you know, I'm hardly even born, you know. Give me a moment here to live before I have to be someone when I grow up. But it's a burden, I think, that can grow heavier and heavier when we take it too seriously. You know, this feeling that somehow, you know, in our lives we should be able to really host excellent dinner parties and plan perfect family vacations and hold down demanding jobs and stay in shape and be improving ourselves. And we're still supposed to be smiling, you know. We're still supposed to be juggling these lifestyles of, you know, work and families and still inwardly getting better and better day by day. And I see people talk about it in interview groups, you know, where they feel that if they haven't got something special to report, they should just stay quiet. You know, that they are no one, that they're not getting anywhere. What would it be like to come to an interview group and just say, well, nothing's happening, and I'm perfectly happy with that? You know, we feel to be a failure as a meditator. You know, something's not going on. And yet we discover that perfection is a constantly moving target. And whenever we're trying to chase it, it's like discontent follows us like a shadow. Now I think, of course, very validly, the question does arise of what is the difference between an endeavor to live an authentic and creative life, to be all that it is possible for us to be, and this process of becoming. And I think it is a very important question. Because to surrender becoming doesn't mean that we're then somehow going to be glued to a meditation cushion for eternity. You know, rather dysfunctional in the world. But the difference between the endeavor to live an authentic creative life and the process of becoming, the quest for perfection, really lies in the presence or absence of agitation, the presence or absence of fear and doubt, the presence or absence of craving and clinging. I think the quest for perfection is somehow, or the process of becoming, is somehow a shadow or a near enemy of the quest for authenticity and liberation. I'm sure that we all long in our lives to live with as much happiness, as much creativity as we can, to serve others, to find a depth of compassion as much as possible, to have an embodied life, a life that embodies what we most deeply value and are committed to. But to do all of this with as much integrity as possible. I think the question for us is that can we do all of this without it being colored by craving or clinging? Without selfing? Without the incessant restlessness that propels us to become one thing after another? I think that we know that to bring into being all that is liberating, all that is healing and joyful, really does require our wholehearted participation and engagement. To be free inwardly, to truly understand what that means, I think we're probably all realistic and wise enough to know that it's not enough just to sit and wait for some great bolt of enlightenment to strike us. I'm sure we're all realistic to know that we're not going to get up one morning and look in the mirror and somehow magically see the Buddha staring back at us. I think we know in our hearts so that it would be foolish to imagine that someone or something outside of ourselves is going to deliver a perfect or blissful life. We know that to be well in our body might require of us to do a little more than live on a diet of beer and pretzels. I think that we know that it's really unlikely that if we spend our lives lost in fantasy and obsession, that somehow this is going to deliver a radiance and calm mind. So can we approach this path of awakening without turning it into a new process of becoming? Without it being hijacked by a new quest for perfection? I know that when I first began to practice myself, I think there was a very unconscious motivation that I brought to the path, that somehow a path of meditation was a kind of more enlightened way to achieve the perfection that I'd sought for in so many other dimensions of my life. So it was like these lifelong patterns of self-doubt, of beliefs in unworthiness, somehow got quite unconsciously translated into this more enlightened language. You know, so that my belief that I needed to become more remarkable or more lovable got superseded by these new goals that I needed to become more peaceful. I needed to become more spiritual. I needed to become more enlightened. You know, and sometimes I feel really badly for people in practice. You know, it was like, you know, in life they carry this heavy burden, you know, of this need to be, you know, so wonderful and perfect and lovable. And then they start practicing, and it's like that portfolio of expectation expands. You know, now I need to become all these other things. You know, I need to become generous and compassionate and, you know, and forgiving. It's like the burden of all this weight of demand and expectation becomes heavier and heavier. And of course, it's not what the practice is about. The practice is not in the service of improving the meditator. The practice is ultimately in the service of letting go of the meditator. You know, the practice is not in the service of having a more enlightened self. The practice is in the service of understanding the emptiness of self-definition. And sometimes I think we really need to be so deeply honest in exploring and investigating our own motivations in practice, if it's not to become a new quest for perfection. And then, of course, becoming in that a new home or birthplace of frustration and self-doubt. And I think that's a really interesting paradigm to explore in the practice. You know, the moments when we get frustrated with ourselves, the moments when we say we're not getting anywhere, the moments when we feel like our practice is not improving or deepening. What is actually going on in that frustration? What is really causing that frustration? Is it because our expectation of ourself has been disappointed? And then in that moment, if that's true, can we bow to disappointment and really understand what it is teaching us in that moment? Not to set up some new expectation or goal or image of perfection, but to understand that disappointment is constantly teaching us the grace of letting go. The disappointment is constantly teaching us the wisdom of not fixing our sense of self in anything. You know, Thomas Merton once said that the essence of spiritual practice is a search for truth that springs from love. That the essence of spiritual practice is a search for truth that springs from love. Now, love is obviously not self-punishing or self-neglecting or self-denying, nor is truth. But love, we might say, comes into being when we find the wisdom and the courage to step off the wheel of becoming. That the nature of love is in its capacity to embrace imperfection. It might be the very nature of love. We might say that the nature of love includes loving the ordinary. Sometimes just having an ordinary mind that does ordinary things. Sometimes just having an ordinary body that does ordinary things. But really understanding that love, it is love, loving attention that illuminates the ordinary. And sometimes I really feel like the definition is of mysticism almost, is being able to see the special in the ordinary and the very ordinary in the special. It is our loving attention that allows what is in this moment to unfold into something else. Now, perfection may not be that point in our life where we feel that nothing more can be added. I think perfection may be that point in our life where we deeply know that nothing can be taken away. Just something very, very different. I think when we look deeply into our life, what we see is a succession of many births and many deaths. Sounds rise and fall. So too does our breath, our thoughts. The sense of our body appears and fades. So too is there a succession of many births and deaths in everything we see and think and feel and experience. There is the lovely and the unlovely, the delightful and the disturbing, the sorrow and the joy. I think more and more we come to see in our practice that we really can't choose in any way to separate ourselves from this endless flow of conditions that we are part of. But we begin to see, and wisdom teaches us, that we can choose how we engage in and participate with that flow of conditions. That we may be able to choose how wise and compassionate and free we can be. I think more and more we come to see in our practice, moment to moment, that the ground really of our awakening is in the cessation of clinging and craving and becoming. That this is really the eternal teaching, not only of the Buddha, but of all great mystics. That the cessation of clinging, craving, becoming is what allows into being happiness and joy and freedom. Now the thoughts that we have now, the feelings that we have now, whether it's restless or discontent or agitated or imperfect, in a way, these are all the classrooms of our awakening. In the midst of all of this, the Buddha encouraged the contemplation. This is not me. This is not who I am. This is not myself. This is really not a theoretical contemplation. But we're encouraged to place that contemplation right in the immediacy of now. You can see your knee hurts, maybe. And how immediate is the reaction to get rid of it, to resist it. And how quickly I and my knee are actually married by clinging. I hurt. And how when that happens, it opens the door to the whole history of hurt in our life to come into being. I'm sure perhaps you've experienced that in sitting. You know, you start with a sore knee and you end up, you know, you're in the classroom or in the nursery school playground remembering everybody, whoever rejected you. You know, it is like the story of hurt grows bigger and bigger with every moment of clinging. We can't even imagine the moment when we're not going to be suffering. And in the midst of all of that, that's where the Buddha encouraged us to contemplate. This is not me. This is not myself. This is not who I am. This does not belong to me. And sometimes we find when we can contemplate that, suddenly we feel a little bit freer. We suddenly allow into being the possibility of a wiser response. I care for that aching knee. You know, maybe I shift my posture. But we allow into being the compassion and the tenderness that allows us to unhook from the story. Have you ever found yourself in the midst of a sitting with a wayward mind and, you know, for a while you cling to the story and you become the storyteller? It might be a wonderful story or it might be a really terrible story. But we found that we have become the storyteller. What we don't see is that the clinging to the story means that the story is actually telling us. That the clinging to the story is actually creating the story of self. We're not even telling the story anymore. That the clinging to the story is actually telling us. I'm suddenly the worst meditator in the world. You know, I'm the worst failure. I'm the worst this. Am I really telling that story? Or is the story telling me? We learn to look at that, to really see it, and to allow into being just a little more of the spaciousness, a little more of the compassion, a little more of the openness. Craving conditions clinging. Clinging conditions becoming. Becoming conditions birth. Birth conditions death. We see that wheel go round and round countless times in our day, the mini succession of births and deaths. It's like I said yesterday, every time we get caught in that wheel, it is as Shantideva said, you know, I long for happiness, but foolishly crush it like an enemy. I yearn to be free from pain, but rush straight into it. We can explore and do explore, I think, in our practice, what it means to bring that wheel to stillness. Not lost in craving, we are not lost in clinging. Not lost in clinging, we are not lost in becoming. What comes into being, what is allowed into being or brought into being, is really the freedom then to rest just in the suchness of all things. There's a wonderful poem. It says, "My daily affairs are quite ordinary, but I'm in total harmony with them. I don't hold on to anything. Don't reject anything, nowhere an obstacle or conflict. Who cares about wealth and fame? Even the poorest thing shines. My miraculous power in spiritual activity, drawing water and carrying wood." If we have just a moment quietly together.